Jim Mallard here. Welcome to the Mallard Report. The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's staying warm out there. I know I'm trying. My guest tonight is Lon Strickler. Lon, thank you for joining me. It's been, you know, there aren't too many people in this field that have been around this long that I haven't talked to, so I feel like an idiot. But don't hold that against me, okay?
Right.
So, you've been doing stuff online since 2005. Am I correct on that?
I started the blog in 2005. Fams of Monsters, the blog. I started that in 2005. But I've been investigating since actually the mid 70s.
So what made you want to start a blog? We'll start with that easy. I mean, I'll get back to the investigating here in a minute. But what made you want to start? Why would you want to start a blog first?
Well, I was actually writing for another website, and I was posting some stuff I'd been through or had experienced, and some of the investigations I had had written down that I'd done previous years, and the guy at the website said, you really should start a blog or something like that, and I had a couple other people mentioned it to me, so that's how it started.
Okay, so take me back to the 70s, because I mean, obviously that is before it was TV cool, as we like to joke around here. So yeah. I'm sure you must have had an experience that made you start digging into it more, or am I assuming that?
I actually had a personal experience back in 1967. I was living near Gettysburg, which I do now again, and I used to spend a lot of time on the battlefield as a kid. So I used to get on my bike and ride from my hometown to Gettysburg, and I used to spend time on the battlefield. And this one particular day, now first of all, I knew that there was something different with me. I mean, I was 9 years old at the time, and I sensed that I could, sense or feel spirit energy, but I wasn't really sure what it was. You know, when you're a kid, you don't really understand any of that. And I never talked to it with my parents or anything. So I'm out on the battlefield. I'm in the area of between Little Round Top and Devil's Den. And all of a sudden, it's like a huge TV screen opens up for me. And I start seeing soldiers and hearing gunfire, smelling gunpowder. And, I mean, all my senses were open. And I was, I'm in the middle of a friggin' battle. And that lasted for like 30 seconds. And all of a sudden, it disappeared. But I after that day, I realized that, there's something going on here. And as time moved on, I started using my intuitive abilities to work cases and such. And so that's how it really started. And as I got older got into the 70s, around the time I graduated from high school, I was actually helping people with cases and with activity around their homes and businesses and such. And, back then, you told someone you were a paranormal investigator, they kind of gave you that crazy look, like,
So, like some people still do today.
Well, absolutely. And it wasn't mainstream back then. Oh, no. I mean, and and I didn't advertise or anything. It was kind of a word of mouth thing. Someone would say something to me, and I'd look into it and get involved. But by this time, after I left high school, I had moved down to the Baltimore, Maryland area. And I was doing cases in Maryland and Pennsylvania for years. Still do. And I lived down there for about 40 years, raised a family. And back in 2016, I decided to move back up here. And I'm back where I started it.
So I've got Germantown Runner in my chat room. He's from Maryland. Of course, I'm from Pennsylvania, so we need you to settle this once and for all. Which state's better?
Well, I mean, it depends what you're looking at.
just say Pennsylvania and be done with it. It'll be okay.
No. Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot more going on in Pennsylvania. But, you know, I lived in Maryland all that time. I kind of liked the city anyway. I was kind of used to say about moving back up here, you know. The small town thing, I guess, that got back ingrained in me. So, I do like Pennsylvania.
And, of course, somebody out there screaming, the better state is Maryland because Pennsylvania is a commonwealth. And I hate people like that. Anyways, you know, it's funny because your location where you mentioned between Little Round Top and Devil's Den, mm-hmm. That's probably why I'm here talking to you tonight, Little Devil's Den.
Really?
Yep. Because I was up on top of that, and I seen some of the same things. Well, not necessarily the same things you're talking about, but I did see some soldiers, and that's where the famous story that I have of going to get a picture for reenactor that I couldn't find just could never find them.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you hear all kinds of stuff out there. I've got a story that a ranger told me once. It was in the same area, you know. You got between Little Round, that whole area is they called it the Valley of Death, because on the second day there was a lot of activity, a lot of death and destruction there. And the wheat field, the famous wheat field, is near there as well. And this ranger was telling me one day that he had a group of women come out to go over to him. It was the middle of the day. And said, yeah, we were really impressed with the reenactors you had out that. And she pointed towards the wheat field. He was over by Devil's Den. And he looked at her and he said, well, we don't have any reenactments going on now. And this woman described a whole regiment out in the middle of the old wheat field. And, you know, they said, yeah, they were impressed by what they looked. Well, they saw a residual... they saw a residual bunch of ghosts out there. So, yeah, and that happens a lot. I mean, I hear people telling me stuff all the time, seeing soldiers out there, which they thought were probably reenactors, but it turns out they saw a residual energy.
It's crazy to think about. So you started the blog. So what made you start one to do... Well, we refer to it as radio. I don't know it's so changing anymore. It's video, it's radio, it's podcast. I don't know. It's radio to me. So what made you start wanting to talk about this, though?
Well, I was invited to do a segment on Beyond the Edge Radio back in, oh, God, when was it, 2011. Eric Altman and Sean Forker were doing the show back then, and they were looking to expand and put some segments in. So I was doing a segment with them every couple weeks or so. And then one day they asked me, you know, you want to come on as a host? And I said, sure. So that's kind of how it started it.
And then, as they say, the rest is history, right? Once you get it in your veins, it's kind of hard to get back out of.
You know, I keep telling myself I don't want to do this anymore. But... you know, I'll probably get away from a couple of weeks, and it's like, oh, well, I mean, I need to do this again. I don't know why, but I keep, you know. So I'll either reinvent, rebrand, or do something. And It continues on.
Yeah, well, you keep busy, though. I mean, it's not like you're...
Yeah.
I mean, because I was running through the website, I'm amazed at the amount of writing you do every week, man. You stay after it.
Yeah, I keep busy. I do a daily thing over there, and if we get some good cases that come in or that lead to full-blown investigations, yeah, and, you know. So there's always something to talk about.
So, the one thing Brian Bowden wanted me to ask you about, I have to give him the credit for this, even though he doesn't get it really, but he gets it anyways. The flying humanoids in Chicago. Why is it just why is it just Chicago?
Well, it's not just Chicago. It's all, you know, we have sightings all the time everywhere.
But what makes the special is just where is Chicago kind of the hub, though, where most of them are?
Well, for whatever reason, there's a lot of them there, and we've had over the years within 250 mile radius of the city, we've had about 140 reports since 2011 that we feel are credible. And that's kind of where we're at now. Now, since 2019, October 2019, most of them have been in the O'Hare International Airport area. But we get them all around. But for whatever reason, that's kind of been the hub there.
Which seems surprising to me because, I mean, when you're talking about an international airport like Chicago O'Hare, level of experimental type things should be minimal, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
Being a, I don't know, common sense approach to that, I guess. I don't know. It just seems like it's hard to believe that, you know what I'm saying, like somebody be screwing around in that area without getting in some serious
trouble. Well, after looking into it and, you know, trying to, you know, find out or understand what's really going on, we believe it's an ultra-terrestrial type beings that are being seen, either coming in from another dimension or using portals to move in and out of our Earth plane and wherever they are. We have one area of the airport where a lot of sightings have been concentrating, and there happens to be a cemetery there, the Rest Haven Cemetery out there in the western area by the cargo carriers, and we've had a lot of sightings around there, and we have calculated that for the most part that area there is where the activity is really the nexus of most of the activity, and we have been gathering a bit of information here and there, so yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, it's kind of a baby step thing where we're just trying to get a grasp of what we're really dealing with. But, yeah, these sightings are very unusual. They happen, you know, not really on a regular basis, but they continue. And people who actually work at the airport, for the most part, have been giving us the reports. There's been a lid on with security. They've been trying to put a damper on this, but every once in a while somebody will come forward and spill the beans and give us an idea of what the counter they had and some of the stuff that's going on. So it continues on after all these years.
So when things start like this, I'm sure you've probably run into this where the quote-unquote copycat, somebody trying to be known for a sighting or an event. You know what I'm talking about. You've been around long enough. I don't have to lay this out too deep for you. So how do you sort through the claims that people are making to you?
Well, in this series of events in particular, we've been pretty impressed from the beginning with the witnesses. They've been forthright. They don't embellish on what they tell us. They stick to the story. And, you know, of course you're going to get a few people that we catch telling us, you know, some type of fabricated report. But for the most part, this has been pretty, been pretty steady with witnesses that they've, you know, the way they react, some of the things they tell us, the consistency of the reports, you know, and that's kind of unusual in encrypted investigation or any type of paranormal investigation.
I was going to say, maybe it's my end of being more of a ghost researcher that has that type of thing where people want to have this great case so they, well, you know, the end game's being on TV, right? Mm-hmm. So if they call you and they have, you know, I'll say it, shit flying through the sky and getting levitated and, you know, all, I mean, you could just run down the list, right? And you're like, holy crap, that must be a great place. And you're there, right? And they're like, then you go there and it's like, what in the world's going on? Nothing's going on here. I mean, except, well.
Yeah, you occasionally get people think that they can, you know, even if they do have a sighting or encounter, they're going to take advantage of it somehow. And, you know, they're going to lead to riches. Well, that may happen occasionally, but very rarely. That's not what I'm in for it for. I mean, you know, I'm not really making much money at this anyway. I can write a lot of books and do a lot of advertising and this and that, but for the most part, it's kind of self-sustaining, and that's about it. It's if I do pay, I'm able to pay the bills for the most part with, you know, the work or with donations, but it's, it kind of gets you in your blood, and that, you know, you want to do it, and you know, you're an enthusiast as well, and you want answers. So that's why I do it, and I think that's why most people who work with me do it as well.
So my question, though, okay, I'll come clean on this one. We're both in the wrong field, right? Because you're from the Fortnite. My kids are gonna love that one. But I was told by a UFO person, I'm going to sell them down the creek at this moment, have a good story, right? Write a book about it, go out and sell it and go to all the events and just keep dangling a little bit more out there, right? You know, and then maybe write that second book and you just keep making the circuit and just keep making the circuit.
Well, I've written 9 books, so, you know, I really haven't been one to go out there and do the so-called circuit. I will do a
I think in the UFO community they have the bigger circuit of people that do that. They're like, they're for whatever reason, I don't get it, like they're their own. I mean, they're special. I found a nice way to say that, didn't I?
That just hasn't really been something that I've really pursued. I mean, for the most part, I'll go to a conference here, get together here or there. But no, I mean, that's not really been something that I've done. And, I don't know if it's good or bad. I kind of let what I do, you know, promote itself, you know, as far as the blog and if I put a book out here and there. But no, I don't necessarily advertise myself, probably, you know, not as much as some other people would want me to do, but I really am not into that. I'm not saying that won't change at some point, but I'm just not really, that's not the person I've really been.
Yeah, so you got that Pennsylvanian in you, right? That it's just put out the work and it'll take care of itself.
There you go.
Because, you know, there are those people out there who blow a lot of hot air and the work they put out is... What's the word for that?
No. You know, I've from the beginning, it's been like, you know, I'll write what I have and I'll put it out there for the general consumption. If people want to read it and form their own opinions, then fine. I mean, I'm not one to really give a synopsis of everything I write. Of course, you know, when you do books and stuff, you got to put a little bit of red meat in there and, or, you know, kind of put people in a direction. But no, I mean, most of what I do with the blog and my writing is, you know, putting out what people are telling me and, let the reader make their own decisions.
So since we're talking about Pennsylvania, What? I mean, I'm assuming it's Bigfoot, right? That is kind of the star of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, and it always has been, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on here. There's a lot of weird stuff that happens in Pennsylvania.
Well, keep going with that because I'm interested because I love these weird stories. I've got a weird story for you that you may have never heard before. So go ahead, tell me one. I'll tell you one here in a minute.
Okay. Well, I mean, I had a pretty interesting encounter back in 1988, which had to do with a winged humanoid. I had known about the Mothman, the whole story by that time anyway, but I wasn't expecting to run into something like that. But actually what happened was, I was living down in Baltimore. I ran into a friend of mine who was, involved in Boy Scouts, and, just met each other at some type of exposition that was going on. And, you know, I hadn't seen this guy in like 12 years or so. So he and I grew up together. We were Boy Scouts together. He actually spent time with me on the Gettysburg battlefield as a kid at nighttime. So he saw a few strange things as well. But we sat there, had some lunch, and we're talking. And he brought up something that had been going on at the old Camp Conewago, which is up here in the area where I live at now, just north of Gettysburg. And he was saying that a lot of these troops who would be camping in the woods around the camp were getting run out of the place because they kept hearing all these god-awful screaming sounds coming from the woods. And the kids were getting scared, and they were packing up and leaving early. And it must have been going on most of the summer. So it was fall by that time, and he mentioned to me as we were sitting there, he said, you know, I know you're into the paranormal and everything. Do you mind coming up along with us next week and give me your take on what's going on? So, yeah, we met up there the next weekend. It was a Friday. And we went into the woods, set up camp, and it was three of us. We had three tents and all, so we set camp up. And, you know, the first night was pretty uneventful. We were just sitting around talking. And so the next day, which was a Saturday, we went out and did some hiking around the area. We were out most of the day. We got back to the campsite about 6 in the evening. It was just starting to turn dark. It was, like I said, it was in the fall. It was in October. And, you know, we got something to eat and sat around the fire and talking most of the night. And at one point, we heard a screaming sound. This was, I don't know, about 10 o'clock in the evening. And, you know, we didn't know what it was. It wasn't discernible. Could have been an animal or something. So we didn't give it much thought, but anyway, we sat there, stayed there. We're talking and all, talking football and all kinds of other stuff that would come up to our mind. And we heard another scream. And now this time, it sounded like a child or a woman screaming. It was pretty blood curdling, to be honest with you. And it was kind of moving in and out, and so we. Yeah, that kind of got our attention that time. So, but we didn't do anything. You know, we sat there and hoping nothing would pop up, but, excuse me. And we just sat there for a while. Then as we were sitting there, I had to get up and walk around and stretch my legs. And I was walking out toward the trail and then, I'm thinking along the, you know, on the trail along the creek. And I was thinking, yeah, I just got this sense something's not right here. So anyway, I went back to where the guys were sitting around the fire. I said, look, let's get our flashlights, go out on the trail a bit and see if we see anything. So, yeah, we got our flashlights, went out on the trail back to back, walking up the trail. We didn't get too far from the campsite at all. And we all three saw at the same time something standing in the creek. you know, there was a lot of moonlight that night, so we could see pretty well, pretty deep into the forest and into the creek, which was to our right, and we saw these big red eyes. And by the time we got our flashlights on this thing, it literally jettisoned itself into the air. And as it reached its apex, you know, we heard this whooshing sound as it moved. And as it reached its apex, we heard it scream again. And then it faded off, but it was loud. And we were freaked out, so we ran back to the campsite, sat down around the fire trying to figure out what the hell we just saw. My buddy, he was shook. He wasn't even saying a word. And the other guy mentioned, you know, did you see something on its back? And I did. I had seen some type of structure on its back, which I assume were probably wings, but I wasn't really sure what was going on. So, you know, we were trying to talk about it a bit. My buddy wasn't talking. Then he eventually said, look, I'm not spending the night out here. I'm going up the administration building. So him and his buddy went up there. So I spent the night alone at the campsite. I didn't see anything else or hear anything else. But, you know, that was back in October of 88. I didn't really say much to a lot of people about it over the years. But after I wrote started writing in the blog, then I posted something about it back in 2008. And I started getting responses from people, local people, who were telling me that they had heard screams and such and over the years. And then I had a scoutmaster tell me that his troop was out there not too distant from that time. And they had been out there, and the kids were out during the day hiking up and down the trail or just nosing about, and they came running back pretty shook up and told the scoutmaster they had seen a dragon. That's what they described it as. He thought they were pulling his leg. And but he didn't think much of it. He said, though, they were scared. And he didn't really think much about it until he read my post. And then he got back to me and said, you know, now I think they actually saw something. I don't know what it was. And over the years, I will occasionally get a report of something very similar to what I saw along the Conewago Creek. Now, the Conewago Creek kind of goes west from Camp Conewago, then turns and heads east towards the Susquehanna River, where it empties into. But I've had reports up and down that creek, and I've had about 5 reports over the years. But very similar, you know, dark in color, large wings, and, you know, the description of wings had vary, but it has the red eyes. People mentioned that as well. So, but be honest with you, this sighting I had and the subsequent sighting reports to me is very similar to what they've seen in Chicago.
Man, I should have went first, because my story is not nearly as good as yours. For the record. No, but that's weird, though, that, I mean, it's... I don't want to say traveling, but it's kind of... I mean, that's still in that kind of same vein. Same... not area, but... As I'm going across the map, it is.
Uh-huh.
But, so my story. I was told this from a guy whose father told him about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God knew I was into the paranormal. He pulls me over and he says, I've got to tell you a story. And I said, oh, well, of course, please. He says, years ago when they were building Interstate 79, which runs from Erie down who knows where, mm-hmm. through Pennsylvania, they built it over Geneva Swamp. And it floats on old growth timber, pretty much, because they couldn't find bedrock in the swamp. So as they were putting that in there, they had people kind of steering them in boats down in as they were piling them down in the ground. And because he was up in the machine piling them down, and there was a couple guys in the boat making sure they were lined up right. And he said one day they were doing that, and they all disappeared. the boat capsized, flipped over. There was a big turtle that was 8 feet wide, and the boat tips over, and the turtle disappeared. Mm. I'm like, an 8 foot wide turtle tipped over a boat. And I said, I imagine he probably was pretty mad that he got hit by a big board. But eight, I mean, that's like massive for a turtle.
I mean, but I'll be honest with you, I've heard similar stories, not necessarily in Pennsylvania, but every once in a while you'll get these huge snapping turtle stories somewhere. Like, wait, it's like the Beast of Busco stories from Indiana. Every once in a while, and I you'll get some type of gargantuan natural animal, and that may very well be true. I mean, you know, who knows?
I was saying, that swamp, anything's possible, right? I mean,
sure,
because there isn't too many people digging around on the bottom of that.
No,
or on the top of that, even. That's crazy. So I wanted to ask you about trends, because it seems like, at least on the popular media side, the TV side, mm-hmm. like it goes through aliens, UFOs, and then it turns to cryptids for a while, and ghosts are kind of always in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But how about the reports? Do they run that same cycle? Have you noticed as one thing becomes more popular on TV, people report more of that to you, or is it unrelated?
You know, it can be at times, but for the most part, I kind of get a well-rounded genre of sightings, of a lot of different stuff. You know, years and years ago, the Bigfoot was kind of the big thing, but as time has gone on, and I think because the paranormal TV and such as that, it being out in the media, people seem less fearful about coming forward. So, you know, of course, we get the upright canine, dog man stuff, and that starts picking up as time goes on. Then, of course, we've always had the winged humanoids, but they kind of come in waves as well. Of course, we're always getting UFO reports and alien reports. The big thing we've been getting more recently are these pale humanoid sightings, from whatever reason, whatever they are. In fact, I just wrote a book about it, and that'll be coming out soon.
Pennsylvania, so you don't get enough sun? Pale humanoid? Oh, wait.
Yeah, I don't know what they are. I mean, I don't know if these are... The book is titled Mean Humanoid, so I don't know if it has anything to do with thought forms or you know, these things being mind manifested from different internet memes or such. It just seems awful weird that, you know, this stuff started showing up online, and then, you know, we start getting all these reports of people actually encountering these beings. Well, like the Slender Man, there's a perfect example. That was nothing more than a meme, a story that ran on the internet, and then people started seeing these things for real. I mean, these two girls in Wisconsin who actually tried to kill their friend because they were trying to satisfy the whims of this Slender Man being, they thought it was real. We've had reports of people seeing these things in the flesh. So, yeah, I mean, and this whole phenomena of these pale crawlers or, you know, we have been getting reports for years now, and it's pretty regular as far as what we get. So that's why I decided just to write about it, because it's a more or less a newer type of cryptid or humanoid or phenomena that's been making its rounds within the community. I think a lot of investigators try to ignore it because they just don't really understand what it is. But we still get the reports. So, so that's something I've been working on for a while now.
So you're going to have to forgive me because I I've been struggling with this one, and I've been asking a lot of people because it seems kind of gray to me still. So some people have a great rock solid definition and are 100% comfortable with it. I'm still in the middle here. What's the difference between a dog man and a Bigfoot?
Well, the description for the most part. I mean, the fact that they're cryptids and they just show up without really any reason or rhyme or reason for it. You know, the upright canines and dogmen are a canine-like being that come in a variety of sizes, but they're usually pretty good size. And, of course, the Bigfoot is a bigger creature that looks more human as opposed to what a humanoid-like dog or canine looks. But they're, you know, I think there's some interchangeable sightings where one may be the other and vice versa. And especially here in Pennsylvania, I mean, we have been taking sightings of these canid cryptids for several years now. And I can see where some of the, you know, somebody will see something and believe it's a canid, but it could be actually a Bigfoot. So I think cryptids, for the most part, and this is my understanding, but I think cryptids are ultra-terrestrial beings. You know, these creatures that we see on this earth plane that people have no explanation for, I think they all come from some unknown dimension. They're portal travelers, and they have the ability to move in and out between dimensions. But I think most of them are. I mean, sure, I think there are some indigenous Bigfoot type beings in certain areas, especially like the Pacific Northwest and in Florida and along the Gulf Coast. There are areas where these beings actually live and breed. But I think for the most part, most of what people see or some type of terrestrial being.
I'm inserting a joke here. I've been at Walmart at 2 a.m. Of course, they're not open anymore all night. But back when they were, I've seen some dog men. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Oh my. Anyways, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You live in Pennsylvania. You know the people I speak of that don't dare come out. They're vampires. They don't come out in daytime.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're out hanging around in the middle of the night, you're going to see some strange things.
And most of them, some of them are normal and some of them aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So, where did that question go? Somebody asked me a good question for you, and live radio, I just skimmed right over it because I was talking to you about some other stuff. Have you worked with any of the hosts or producers from any of the cable paranormal shows? If so, what's it like?
I have cursory involvement with some people, but for the most part, it's just, you know, actually doing investigations with some of them. No, I just haven't done that. Most people have their own thing going. I've got my own thing going. I've got my own people working, so we kind of keep to ourselves. Yeah, occasionally somebody will get involved with it. I mean, just like the beginning of the with these winged humanoid sightings, you know, Rosemary Ellen Guiley and I were working pretty close together with that. And, you know, she kind of helped me get off the snide with this thing and try to help me out. She was following up with witness sightings and contacting people and verifying. You know, and I had known Rosemary for a while, so, you know, her, yeah. I mean, I've worked with her before, and occasionally I will work with others, but, you know, it, for the most part, it's just me and my group.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
Stay in these Pennsylvania hills and just let it roll by.
Mm-hmm.
Stay out of trouble that way. Is Gettysburg your... I know you're more of the other kind of investigators, but is Gettysburg your favorite ghost place?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's familiar. It's something I'm used to, but, you know, it's probably got more energy than any other place I've ever been to, and I've been to a lot of places, but honestly, that there's something about Gettysburg, you know, because of the battle and other phenomena that's associated with the area, and it's just like the place is imprinted with activity, and most areas that had seen fighting or battles and such are imprinted, and I go down to Antietam, and I get senses of stuff that happened there as well, and in most places where there's been activity, some type of a battle or a fight or something. But no, Gettysburg is by far, in my opinion, the most haunted place in the world.
So which one of these creatures keeps you... This is a bad question. Which one of these questions keep you up at night? Which one of these creatures keep you up at night?
Oh, nothing keeps me up.
Oh, come on.
I've had encounters. I've had a Bigfoot encounter. I had this winged humanoid encounter. And, there's some things I wouldn't want to encounter. I mean, the upright canines, I'm not too particular about ever running up against. They're just scary looking creatures. And from what people tell us about them, they're frightening. And no, I don't think I'd ever want to run up against one of those things.
I hear you, man. I think it's fascinating, though, because there's a lot of these different things. Now, this is the one that gets me. Because there are just people out there who just see one, right? Either ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot. And then there's a whole different category of people that see all of them, which fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wonder, because I've had some ghost experience, but I have not yet experienced the other, so I'm in that small group that just sees the one.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing wrong?
No, you're not doing anything wrong. I know investigators, seasoned investigators, well-known investigators, who have never had an encounter at all. Stan Gorin's a perfect example. You know, he's never seen anything that he reports on. You know, other than, of course, he was involved with the Keksberg UFO, and, he caught a glimpse of that thing. But as far as actually having a overwhelming encounter with, like, a Bigfoot or a huge UFO or something like that, no, And this guy's been doing this since the 60s, so no. I think... I've been very lucky. Now, I've never seen a UFO that I would consider a UFO, but I've seen some other things in all these years that, I believe demonstrate completely that there is something out there, and there are things out there that we can't explain. And but no, there are people who have been doing this for a long time that had just never had much of an encounter at all.
You're too busy sleeping at night. That's all I just...
Well, that may be. I mean, I don't know.
Nothing's keeping you up at night, so you're not looking up at night.
Yeah, I mean, no. nothing bothers me much of anything. And, of course, I've had some strange encounters that ran into the evening, like, when I was abducted at one point, I believe I was, and I've had some strange encounters at home with beings, nothing like waking up while you're laying there and there are three tall beings standing beside you, and that gets your attention. So, but no, I've had a few things happen to me.
So I'm going to dramatically shift gears here because I'm interested. You've wrote 9 books, and you write this blog all the time. How do you keep from getting writer's block?
Oh, I do get writer's block. Okay, there have been times, especially writing the books. I never really go into it with a good mind. it's usually because of something that I've been involved with. Like where I think, I need to write, instead of just putting it out there, I need to write a book about it, go more in depth into it. That's just like what's been going on in Chicago. Now, I've written 2 books that have had these sightings in it, and I'm probably end up going to do a third. You know, it's just one of those things. As time's going on, the sightings can continue, and we're coming up with different variables to possibly explain what's going on. But, you know, we're always getting new theories and new cases that kind of bolster those theories. So, yeah, that's probably going to require another book.
Yeah, but you didn't really you kind of dodged the question there. How do you keep the energy flowing to keep writing? I guess is
all. Oh, I don't know. I mean, it. Yeah, I. You know, it's like I get up every day, and the first thing that I think about is what I'm going to write for the blog that day, and then I do what I got to do. I spend the 4 or 5 hours daily that I need to do that. And, you know, something else comes up, then I do it. But I'm always busy with this. I've got people calling me constantly and sending me stuff. And that's why I actually started the Phantoms of Monsters 14 research team, where I've got investigators and affiliates who kind of are my boots on the ground, kind of look at the and investigate firsthand this stuff that comes to me. And, yeah, I got to hand it to them. They do a lot of legwork as opposed to what I'm able to do anymore. And, but no, I'm busy. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I probably spend more time than I really need to do. But, yeah, I do spend a lot of time behind the computer.
Now, I mean, that's where it's at, though, right? If you're going to do it, you got to do it. You got to do it right. I mean, like I said, we've kind of danced around it earlier about people who just... anyways, we won't get...
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you, and you know, this might sound crazy, but I kind of feel obligated to it at this point. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, if I suddenly stopped, there are going to be people driving me crazy wanting to know what's going on, and, yeah. So
no, I know. Trust me, I know.
Occasionally, I end up having to go to the hospital or something or go on vacation. I'll have to stop for a period of time. But
and even then, man, I know because like a couple years ago, I had thyroid surgery, right? And I had stitches in my neck, and I was bound and determined. I had the surgery on Friday. I was bound and determined to host the show on Tuesday. I couldn't talk until Monday morning. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm like, I'm doing this. My wife's like, you're still not talking. I'm like, I still got 24 hours. I'll be better.
Well, you know, back in the fall of 2016, pneumonia. So I'm in the hospital. I've been there. I was there for a week. I had to get my son to tell him, look, bring the laptop in to my room and everything's, I'm going to have to work because I got people bugging the crap out of me, and I got to keep going at this.
Well, yeah, because what else are you going to do while you're sitting there? That's the worst. When you're just sitting there trying to be better.
Yeah,
they tell you to relax. That's the worst thing in the world.
I hate not being able to, you know, get back and answer and do things. Yeah, it does work on you after a while. Am I obsessed? Yeah, maybe to a point, but you know, it's just part of what I do. I enjoy doing it. If I did enjoy doing it, I would do it. You know, that's just the way I am. But, yeah, I guess maybe I am obsessed to a point, but I feel obligated to do it there at this point.
Yeah, but I think once you get that going, right, you just you get going, and then it starts feeling itself, and you feel like if you take a day off, I know how I feel, right? It's like,
yeah,
you're 2 days behind then because you got to look at all the stuff from today and all the stuff from yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I do take a day off once in a while, but, you know, I don't know. It's, I mean, there have been times when I said I'm going to take 2 or 3 days off and just take a day off, and probably more times than not. But, no, I try to take time, but I'll be honest, it's difficult. It really is. It's difficult to move away from the laptop and away from the phone for a long period of time.
So I feel like an idiot at this point because I assume most of my listeners know who you are and know where to find you. But for anybody out there who has now found out a wealth of information about you and wants to know the website and all, you know what I'm talking about. You're an old hat.
Yeah, well, I mean, the blog is Fams of Monsters. It's famsofmonsters.com. I've been doing it now for, well, God, how long now? Almost 17 years. It's a daily thing, and we post daily, and I try to keep an update of certain new cases that do come, and but you know, yeah, that's what I do. And I'm on my new, well, my radio show used to be Arcane Radio, but it's changed its name. It's rebranded. It's Fams of Monsters Radio now. I think hopefully it's going to be easier for people to find. And if you go to YouTube and just put Fams of Monsters into the search, it'll come up. It's a live show we do every Friday, and we do a few other things as well. The Fams of Monsters 14 research team can be found at cryptidhunters.org. Our team cases are listed there. So that's pretty well how you can get a hold of me. My contact is all listed there, the email or the phone number. And, you know, if you've got something happen or something, you've seen something, you know, you want to talk about it, feel free to call me.
And the obligatory, the books are on Amazon, and he's all over social media.
Yeah, that too.
Just, you know, just because it just seems like, I know, trust me, you're the same way I am. Like, just type in Mallard wherever you are, and you'll find me. Like, I don't really care anymore. Like, and sometimes it shows. Like, you just get too many places and too much time. I mean, there's only so much time that you can put in these things anymore. But
yeah.
So the radio show. When did you branch out and start doing your show?
Well, Beyond the Edge kind of folded for a while, and I decided with Sean Fork and I decided to start Arcane Radio back in, oh God, when was it? 2005? Like 2015. So we did that together. Then we actually got onto another show we did for about 6 months. And then he kind of got tired of it. And then I decided, well, I'm going to restart Arcane Radio. That was back in 2017, 18, and that's where I've been. And it was Arcane Radio for about 5 years, and I was on a YouTube channel, Beyond Explanation, but that has kind of been rebranded now, so it's going to be hopefully from now on Fantasy Monsters Radio.
There you go. I mean, it's a journey, right? It's all about the journey. Yeah. It's not about... I don't even know where the destination is anymore, right? Like, have you figured yours out yet? Because maybe I could take some notes.
No. It seems that we all evolve at some point. You know, and I think with people like us who are involved with the paranormal, you got to kind of make it fresh occasionally and... either rebrand or just make things, you know, things are presented in a different way. Of course, the blog has kind of been the same for me, but I've kind of branched out here and there and doing things. But be honest with you, everything kind of stays the same for the most part. So that's just the way it is.
The more it changes, the more it stays the same.
Absolutely.
I think I've heard that once or twice.
Yeah. Yep.
So outside the paranormal,
mm-hmm.
What do you do for your free time? Where I mean,
not much. You know, there used to be a time when I, you know, I do a lot of reading. I'm not really a television person, though I do watch things here and there. I used to do a lot of fly fishing. I'm disabled now, so it's not conducive for me going out into the woods and or out to the streams and doing that anymore. I do try to get out a bit, to the chagrin of people who try to get me out to do things. they kind of throw up their hands and give up. But no, I mean, honestly, my wife and I were together for like 33 years. She passed away back in 2015. So my son lives with me, and you know, we moved back up to Pennsylvania, and I'm kind of a home guy. I mean, you know, I'll go where I have to go, but I'm not really out there doing things I used to, like I, you know, like it was before. You know, that may change at some point.
It may. It may. I'm going to lean probably not, but we'll just let you have that moment there where I get it, man. Like, it's, I don't get out too much either. So maybe it's another Pennsylvania thing where you just kind of.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the internet and communications and stuff, it makes it too easy to sit around and do everything at home. And, I think a lot of us get lazy like that, but, you know, I do admire people who are able to go out and do the hands-on investigations. I'm just not able to do that anymore. I wish I could, but for the most part, don't. Now I'll do local investigations, and, if I have to travel a bit, I will, but, you know, it's not like it used to be.
And you'll agree with this one. You used to go out with your friends because that's, you had your friend group locally, but I'm sure you have, sure, are the same way I am. Like, I'm looking at my chat room right now. I got people in Maryland and Canada and New York, and, you know, like, they're to get together with them, you have to be online. Like,
well, yeah. I mean, a big part of the people I associate with are people I've never actually met in person. That's just the way it is nowadays. And, you know, we always talk about getting together and doing things. And, you know, recently the guy who I had been working with closely passed away. And, yeah, so that's going to have to change. Things are going to have to be, other people are going to have to step in his shoes. And, yeah, so it evolves.
And it does. Never, again, the more it changes, the more it stays the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Lon, I appreciate you jumping on with me. I mean, it wasn't quite the last minute, but I knew it was. But I knew, you know, there are certain people you just know who understand, who have been there, who have been on the other side, where they get to that point and they're like, oh, God.
Yeah. No, I'll be honest with you. I absolutely hate booking people to do shows. And that is probably my least favorite thing to do, but it has to be done. I try to give that responsibility to other people now, but, you know, I'm kind of a micromanager, I'll admit to it, and, you know, I'm always sticking my thumb in stuff, so, yeah.
And sometimes I'm booked out 6 weeks, and then sometimes I realize the day off, I'm like, oh, da, 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 da.
Oh, yeah, I get that, yeah. And people are always canceling on you for whatever reason, and it just seems to work out that way.
Well, thank you again, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
No problem.
Have a good night.
You take care.
And that's Lon Strickler there from Phantoms and Monsters. I wanted to take a quick moment here as we wind in down tonight's program. It says 7:50 on your screen. Try refreshing. I don't know. That's weird. Maybe you're in some sort of time portal, Germantown Runner. Good to have you back, by the way. Good to have a lot of you back. I mean, I've seen a lot of illness and a lot of stuff going on. And for those of you who are recovering, I'm glad you're recovering, and I'm sending you all positive thoughts. And thinking about Brian Bowden, and he needs some positive energy as well. He's got a lot of the other side of that, of people who have passed. And just want to send out a lot of positive to all of you. There's a lot going on in the world right now, and we need to take care of each other the best we can. So let's make sure we do that. And, yeah. And I'm sorry for those of you who are watching the video who missed the intro because some idiot. Yeah, Brian, you know, I'm trying to help and mess it up. But we'll get there, one way or the other. I can promise you. I'm not sure how long my intro is tonight. Outro tonight is. So we're just going to try to hit this post.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
Science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Mm. Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.